Just want to welcome everybody to this episode of Campfire Conversations. This is our fourth episode here on Shred Space. The first three episodes were absolutely incredible. And I think in large part that is due to everybody who is here. So whether this is your first time in the space or you've had a number of conversations here, it really is the intentionality that our audience brings, the amazing questions that you bring, and just that intention that you bring here that I really do think elevates these conversations. And it really lets our guests show up in a way that I feel is very authentic. It's authentic and it is also kind of imperfect, because when you really show up as yourself, you show up with all of those little imperfections that we all have as people. So for Sasha, I just want to welcome you here tonight and just say, you know, we really are here to create this space for you to just kind of share yourself with us, some of your stories, some of the wisdom you've gleaned along the way, and what has been a really, really amazing career. So Sasha, welcome. We're really happy to have you here tonight.
It's a pleasure to be here. I really love the idea that this is called Campfire Conversations, because it makes just think of the nights when you've been out climbing or having an epic day outside and you're all like sitting around the fire, drinking if you drink or doing whatever, you know, like having conversations. So I'm excited to dive in here and answer whatever questions you guys have. It's been a wild year for me, and so I think for a lot of people. I'll let you lead the start.
Cool. Yeah, just to give you a sense of the structure, it'll probably be about 20 or 25 minutes of just me and you, and then we'll bring some folks up from the audience so you can kind of get a chance to chat with people who are here and give everyone an opportunity to ask you some questions. So, sound good?
Yeah, sounds great.
Awesome. So, so Sasha, you and I actually connected on Instagram very briefly, and it was really interesting. I did not know that you actually have been recovering from some pretty significant injury for the past year. I have been recovering myself from some COVID-related heart issues. So I figured we could kind of start there. Can you just tell everybody about, you know, kind of what you've been going through over the last year, maybe how all this kind of started for you?
Yeah, totally. It actually started exactly a calendar year ago. I was having really hip pain, and it was becoming for the last like 3 years. I had a couple expeditions that I think threw it over the edge. But as athletes and just adventure goers, I think that we become really good at digesting and managing pain and incorporating it into our daily lives. So I kind of was just operating and taking ibuprofen every night, not really knowing what was going on, until it kind of got to a tipping point a year ago where I was like not able to sleep and just feeling like this constant really dull achiness and instability in my hips, where it felt like, which it was, my femur popping out of my pelvic bone. And so I went in for an MRI and imaging because I wanted to get a cortisone shot to go on this expedition that I had in Mexico. And when I went in for the cortisone shot, I obviously had to get an MRI first. And I remember the doctor and the surgeon, like this whole trail of people with like concerned faces came in, and they were like, yeah, not just a cortisone shot fix. So basically, long story short, it turned out that I had hip dysplasia, which is relatively common in female athletes and backgrounds like ballet and figure skating, dancing, and apparently climbing, which makes a lot of sense because climbing is a really hip dominant sport. And I'm 28. I started climbing when I was 6. So I've been climbing for 22 years. And it is either developmental or you can be born with it. It's kind of like uncertain how to tell exactly how the hip dysplasia came about in the first place. But basically, it's an overuse injury from an anatomical unsturdiness in my hips that led to basically my femur head almost popping out of my pelvic bone. And what held it in there before was my labrums and surrounding soft tissue, which I had over the last couple of years just totally shredded through. And so that the choice that the surgical team basically gave me was I was looking at a total hip replacement 4 to 6 months if I kept climbing on it and trying, because I was wearing down the cartilage that was protecting the bone on bone rubbing, which leads to having to totally replace your hips or do this preventative hip reconstruction surgery on both of my hips. So I definitely feel like I'm in the prime of my climbing career as it pertains to like going outside and all these adventures that I don't want to have that idea of my hip replacement popping out, which is pretty common, or like needing a new hip replacement in 20 years. So for the preservation of my career, I was like, let's do the hip reconstruction and let's try and make it as efficient as possible. So I basically did them back to back within the time frame of as soon as I was off crutches on my left side, I did my right side so I could stand on my other leg. They wouldn't let me do like both of them at the same time, which is kind of the masochistic way that I was just like, well, get me back to sport quicker. But yeah, that's that. I 2 weeks ago had all the hardware removed, which were six inch screws, which is kind of wild to hold. So that's my hip journey so far. Yeah.
So I mean, a year ago, you're about to go on this epic kind of trek to Mexico, this epic expedition to Mexico. You're really in the prime of your career. Suddenly your doctors are telling you, okay, you know, we have to undergo this significant surgery. What emotions were you feeling in that moment?
It was like living in a totally emotionally shocked world where everything felt like falling apart. The most I had ever taken off for injury, cracked two vertebrates in my back before, and had like kind of like stress fracture injuries and stuff like that. But ironically, like the most I had taken off was 6 weeks, and I was looking at 6 to 12 months off of climbing. And then that night, I kind of processed everything. And after speaking to my surgeon, I was like, well, how about this? If I'm not gonna, like, if nothing's gonna change in the next like 2 to 3 weeks drastically, how about I go down to Mexico, do this climb that I've been training for since the fall, and it's the spring now, and then come back and throw in the towel and feel like I had a last hurrah. And so that was kind of the plan that we made. And then that night, I found out that one of the people on our team who had gone ahead of time to climb on the route and set the static line for the crew that would be filming us climbing had this crazy tragic accident where he was on the 14th pitch and a rock broke and he fell and the rock cut his rope. And so he fell 1,400 feet. And, just like the prior day, I was coordinating gear with him. And we were, like, chatting about being so stoked for the trip. And so that kind of put, like, everything that I was pining over in perspective. Like, It was like, okay, hips don't matter anymore. Let's go to Mexico and rescue his body and make sure that Aaron, who is his climbing partner, can get off the wall safely. And so the next morning I flew to Mexico with Savannah, who is going to be the one filming, whose boyfriend it was. His name was Nolan. And then Nolan's family came down, his mom and dad and brother. And it was just like a really weird, hard week because I hiked his family in to get a perspective of the wall. And we looked at the line with binoculars and it was the first time I was seeing the climb in person. And it was not in the way that was supposed to be happening. Like, it was in exactly the opposite way that I'd ever want it to be happening. And then, you know, everything kind of happened that week. We got his body and got Aaron rescued off the wall. And then we flew back and, like, this obscure thing called COVID was happening. And it was, like, March 12th. And it felt, I think, like, just a couple of days later, the world kind of shut down. And so I didn't know when surgery was going to be. It was supposed to be end of March, and all hospitals were dealing with COVID and outpouring of need there. So I just remember feeling like this super dark spiraling hole where I was like, I don't even know what's certain about life anymore, because like, this climb that I thought was everything, it just killed my friend. My career is in jeopardy of this massive set of surgeries, feeling like everything I had trained for was for nothing because we didn't even climb. And all these thoughts, I think just like all these negative emotions were pouring out, and it was dark, honestly. It was, yeah. It was a hard stage of life.
Yeah. I'm really sorry to hear about your friend. I mean, that's horrible to lose somebody that you care about. So thank you for sharing that here. I mean, it sounds like you were experiencing quite a lot of loss all at once. And, you know, there's certainly a grieving process that kind of goes along with that. And I guess I'm curious in terms of how you kind of worked through that, if you do feel like you're on the other side of that, or if you're still kind of maybe just coming out of that, you know, and how have you kind of grown and changed through that entire experience, plus, you know, the entire year after that, where I imagine you were not climbing, which is probably a significant part of your identity and your life.
Yeah, I had to totally find new purpose. So much of where I feel my anxiety and let out my energy and find meaning in life has always been associated with sport. And the main surgeries were 4, 2, and 2, basically, like, shortly spread apart. And I was pretty bedridden after the main, called the PAO, where they break your pelvic bone in 4 places and then pin together with screws. So, like, I couldn't sit up in a chair. Like, you couldn't bend past 90. And so I had a lot of time, which I normally feel like my past life felt like it was constantly in motion. And I graduated from Columbia University in 2016. And I had studied nonfiction writing and business management. And so I started writing a lot more. I started working actually on a book proposal, which is kind of like, I feel dumb even saying because it sounds daunting. But that's something I've been working on. And then I've always had this passion for learning more about nutrition and as it pertains to my sport and performance and what I bring up with me on the walls. So, like, what I've always done with big walls is I've made my own bars because it's virtually impossible to get enough greens when you're living on the wall for a week or something. Mm. Like, you're not bringing up, like, spinach or, like, a lettuce head. So what I do is, like, bring in greens powders that I would just buy from the store and incorporate them into my bars and add adaptogens and stuff like that. So I guess in my process of finding purpose, I was like, what if I actually did something with this? And, that was something that I embarked on too, is, and I'm really in the throes of the process of what it may look like, but I filed for a C Corp for Send Bars, like SEND. Mm-hmm. And that gave me a lot of purpose too. I built a team of really epic women around me. It was pretty important to be female focused and founded. So one of my friends is a former Olympian turned chef and nutritionist to help me develop the bar recipes and stuff like that. But I guess it's a long-winded answer to say I had to find a new purpose.
Yeah, it's really amazing to hear you sort of talk about that and finding that purpose when sometimes maybe we kind of are set aside from the thing that we normally do. So it sounds like you were able to work through that, and I'm assuming you are coming back to climbing. Would that be correct?
Yeah, I'm actually like it, for the last my last surgery, the big one was in September. And then 2 weeks ago, I got my hardware removed, but I've been getting back into climbing again. It's been like a really weird road of getting out of surgery, having this forced break, then getting to train again. And then, having like a little like 10 day or 14 day hiatus that I took kind of lightly with getting back to training, because my motivation actually feels really high after all of this. It's interesting because I think because I've been climbing for so long and it became my job too, the motivation definitely hit like valleys as well as peaks. And now I feel like the thing that I love the most about what I do is just like the sheer joy of climbing. And like, I miss that so much. And the first days of getting back to climb after like 6 or 7 months off. And I was like just able to top rope because I couldn't have impact on my hips and like do it really at like a pretty remedial level. I was just so pumped. Like I was so happy to be in it. And so now I'm actually training to go back to Mexico in April, which feels like, it might be too soon. I kind of just need to see where I'm at physically. But I was just in Aspen this weekend and I thought that I didn't even buy a ski pass or like the Icon pass is normally what I get. I didn't even get that because I figured I couldn't ski this year because of everything going on. And I've actually been skiing since I was 3 and it would have been my first time not skiing ever in a winter. And I was pretty pumped to get some turns in too. So I'm feeling like really grateful to be on the up.
That's awesome. Yeah. The one thing I am missing right in my life right now is skiing. So I'm hoping next season I'll be out there.
Yeah, totally. I feel like I should be interviewing you about what.
No, it's okay. So some other time, trust me, people are much more interested in you here than they are in me. my next question I want to ask you, Sasha, has a little more to do with kind of your approach to life generally. And before I do, though, I just want to reset the room and then I'm going to read your bio because your bio is just unbelievably impressive. So if you're just joining us, we're with professional climber Sasha DeJulian. She's got an unbelievable number of accolades in her life in her only a 22-year climbing career that started when she was 6. We're going to get to the Q&A in probably 5 to 10 minutes. I'm going to go into one more topic with her. So if you have a question, please stick around. Also, if there's anybody on Clubhouse that you think like you're like, wow, they need to be here, ping them into the room. Hit that little plus button. Get them into the room because I think Sasha has a lot of amazing things to share with us. So Sasha, here's your bio as I pulled it down, I believe, from your website. So you began climbing at 6 years old in 1998. You've won the world champions for female overall. You've placed silver in bouldering world championships, as well as bronze in the duel. You were the undefeated Pan American champion from 2004 to 2014. You are a 3-time U.S. national champion. Outdoors, you were the first North American woman to climb the grade 9A 514D. You graduated from Columbia University in New York City, having studied nonfiction writing and business. You're on the board of the Women's Sports Foundation, and you serve as a global athlete ambassador for Right to Play, Up to Us Sports, and the American Alpine Club. You've also served as the athlete representative on the board of the International Federation of Sport Climbing. You've been the recipient of multiple awards, including Glamour Magazine's Top College Women of the Year in 2016, the Cutting Edge Athlete Award for 2014 Performance, the Golden Piton Award, and the ARCO Rock Legend Award for Outstanding Achievement in the Outdoors. You are not even 30 years old yet, Sasha. That is a remarkable amount of accomplishments, and I'm sure they're not even all listed there, in addition to being probably an amazing family member and having all these people in your life. My question to you here is have you had some sort of maybe guiding philosophy that's led you through this? And, you know, how much has rock climbing taught you about your approach to life itself?
Yeah, I love that question, because life is so much beyond just anything about the climb. So I lost my dad pretty suddenly 5 years ago, and the mantra that he always left me with was be safe, have fun, and do your best. And he would say that to me before every trip I embarked on, and that's definitely something that's been really important for me to always remember, is like on expeditions, you're constantly kind of playing the game of mitigating what's irrational and rational fear, and how much risk can you hang out on the line, and what's it worth. And so that element of safety is really significant. And then having fun is like, at the end of the day, if you're going out on a climb fueled by ambitions that aren't genuine to actually wanting to be there, then I just don't think that it sets you up ever for success or like enjoyment. And then doing my best, like, I know that I'm just like an imperfect human learning. And I feel like this year, like most years, like just, you get thrown into the ringer and you have to adapt and learn, because that's the only way to keep moving forward. And I more and more over the years of losing people close to me, and you know, accidents happening in the outdoors, I feel like it's just so important to be happy with what you're doing. And something that I've missed so much over this last year while being injured is like being out in a non-materialistic environment. Like this year has been hard for so many reasons for so many people, but normally what really grounds me when I like go out on an expedition is you're just like there living on the wall or camping with your climbing partner, and life feels really simple. And I kind of live in this world mindset, I guess, where I love being feminine and dressing up and going out to fun, fancy things. But then what makes me feel like really alive and rejuvenated is the trips where like I don't even have a change of clothes, because it's just like, why would you change your clothes on a portal? And so I feel like that simplicity is what I'm missing now. It's like I've lived this year in a temperature controlled environment, which feels weird. And I guess my philosophy on life is just, yeah, enjoying it and not taking it for granted. Like, I mentioned this to you on Instagram, as we are planning this, but I drove home from Aspen yesterday early to go on a bike ride with my mom, and her bike spun out on a steep part of a hill where she hit a gravel patch, and we ended up in the ER, and she just had surgery, and it's going to be a couple more surgeries, and it, like, she's okay. It's not life-threatening, but it's definitely going to be a long road, and it's really rattling, because you see the fragility of time and moments, and how everything can change so quickly. And like, it's just wild, because you can't take anything for granted, not even like a neighborhood bike ride, you know? So I think that's been just like my approach even more and more to life. It was pretty prevalent changing moment for me when we lost my dad, and I feel like each year presents its own challenges that you just like kind of grow from.
Yeah, so thoughts definitely with your mom. I hope she recovers quickly and everything's all right. But yeah, those events definitely put things in perspective for sure. So do you, my kind of last question here before we go to the audience is, you know, what has climbing itself taught you in your own approach, not just to climbing, but the way you live and maybe the front country world?
Yeah, I like that. I'm like, where do I start? Everything in my life has been an adaptation metaphor to climbing, but not to be cheesy about it. Like now, I guess like when I was approaching this year with my recovery, for instance, I knew it was going to be a lot, but I thought of it kind of like a big wall where you would just like pitch it out. So break it up into pieces and see each pitch per se, which is like an individual rope length, as its own challenge. And then like, once you get through to the anchor of that first pitch, then you're on to the second pitch. And it's not like life needs to have like a destination or whatever, but I think that my mindset around setting goals is often pretty focused around like, what's the big picture and how can I break it down into these little pieces so that I can, I can have a piece to chew on that's not like biting off a whole whale. And then definitely like discipline and commitment and failure. Like the year before I won the world championships in the women's open, so it's like all women of all ages, adult category, whatever, I was at my final year in the junior category. It was in Edinburgh, Scotland, and I felt so confident going in. And I was like in the lead after qualifiers, in the lead after semifinals, was kind of like sitting in a good spot for finals. And I remember it so vividly. Like in finals, I just slipped, like my foot slipped. And I, to this day, like remember that feeling of my heart like sinking in my chest, being like, ugh, I lost it. And feeling like the total devastation, but then that carrying me into the next year where I had a pretty breakout year in my career. And like, that gave me such fuel to train so hard that my mindset was like, I want to train and be so ready that even on my worst day, I'm still the best. And that was just like my competitor mindset, that I think that moment in that competition really set me up for a good year following.
So yeah, so it kind of fueled your fire for that next year.
Yeah, totally. And like, yeah, I think in life, like you have all these like small wins and small losses. It's just like, how do you deal with them and stand back up?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I want to make sure that everyone in the room gets an opportunity to come up here to ask Sasha questions. So if you've got a question, feel free to raise your hand. Come on up here. Don't be afraid. We don't bite. All right, I'm going to pull Amina up here. And Alex and Ryan. Cool. Amina, how are you?
Hi, guys. I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on up. Feel free to ask your question to Sasha.
Thank you. Hi, Sasha. It's super nice to meet you. I've been following you for a while. Thank you for being so open with us, first of all. It's really, really interesting to hear your story and hear about how you're kind of coping with everything. It's extremely inspiring. I wanted to ask you about kind of like something that has to do with while you're physically on the rock and managing fear, because my biggest issue, I've recently started climbing, so I'm not anywhere like great, but my biggest issue is that when I'm on the rock and I'm lead climbing something a bit harder for me or like a higher grade than I usually climb, I get this fear that just comes over me and I just can't like control it. So I wanted to ask you how you manage to control your fear during a scarier route, or like what helps you get out of that mindset so you can actually like commit and send it.
Yeah, well, that's such a prevalent question because it's like something I'm dealing with right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that fear is real and it comes in so many different forms. I've been dealing with that. I feel like this whole kind of experience the last year, I've been in this super fragile mode. And so even just the idea of like my harness being around my previous broken pelvic bone and like what it'll feel like, all these thoughts, like I totally hear that point. Like they flood your mind over the what ifs. And what I've been doing to manage it and getting back into lead climbing is really like letting go, like starting even in the gym. And if you're lead climbing, like I'll climb to the bolt and then let go and take a small fall. And then I'll climb a little higher and like take another fall. Cause I feel like the fear in climbing comes around this, this formation that we create in our minds over like what's going to happen if we fall. And yeah, sometimes it's not even really based in anything. I kind of feel like fear exists only in the present and like the future mm-hmm. could happen. And so if you reset that mind frame of thinking positively and like just kind of committing to going for it, that's at least how I feel like I've managed it. And even falling in different angles and different directions on the wall, so I can just get more used to debunking this idea of what it's going to feel like to fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I agree. I think also what I try to do is kind of bring myself back to the moment, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm holding on right now, and I didn't fall yet, so I don't need to like predict the fall, and that usually leads to me falling even. Yeah, thank you so much for the advice.
You can try and think about falling. I think that that's like one of the big things to work towards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Thank you.
Awesome advice there from Sasha. Yeah, I think I've had a similar experience in learning different sports like surfing, where you're like, oh my god, if I fall in this huge wave, I'm gonna drown, and then you do it and it's not so bad.
Yeah, exactly.
My surfing has been like swimming because of that. I can surf. Yeah,
I definitely understand that. But all right. So thank you, Amina. All right, let's go over to Alex. Alex, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks. I'm super grateful to be able to be here listening to you guys and talking to you guys.
Well, welcome up, and thank you for being here. And yeah, feel free to ask whatever you want to Sasha.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, Sasha. It's super nice to virtually meet you, I guess. And I'm also like Amina, like a relatively newer climber, mostly done just gym climbing, you know, but I've been super into, as a movie buff, I've been super into a lot of the newer, you know, popular climbing movies, Free Solo, Don Wall, all of those. And I'm just curious, you know, with the recent popularity, like rise in popularity in climbing from all the media and movies that's come out, have you seen any significant changes in the climbing community or climbing culture at all? And how has that been positive or negative for you?
Good question.
I like that question a lot. Thanks for bringing that up. There's definitely been an influx of media around climbing. And you see that translated in, at least in a pre-COVID world, like the popularity in climbing gyms. Like there's just so many people in gyms, and I feel like the gym industry was really exploding before the pandemic, and like every urban city around the world feels like has been introducing climbing gyms to it. And I think that comes from like an array of reasons, but climbing media definitely has a part in it, like people watching an Oscar winning film that's climbing. I think it introduces a lot of people to the sport. What you do see, though, is there's a bridge that needs to be built and maybe articulated as well from gym to outdoors, because there are skills that wouldn't necessarily translate from the gym to being safe outside, where maybe you're going from a gym and there's like pre-hung quick draws and foam mats around you, so everything's pretty controlled and safe, to an outdoor environment where you are dealing with the elements. And I've been at the Crag where I've seen people like not know exactly what they're doing. And like, there's not going to be a belay test when you walk up to the Crag and like, you know, to get a little cert card to be able to partake in the sport. It's like play at your own risk. And so I feel like, if we utilize guide services and lean on even like introductory courses at the gym or outside, then that could increase safety. And you never really want to be like at the Crag seeing people not necessarily being safe. Cause it's, I like, don't like to, tell people how to do things. But I also don't want to witness someone have a tragic accident either. And then I guess what I would say from free solo in particular, as a professional climber, I have definitely noticed people be like, oh, wow, you climbed. Is that like that guy in free solo? And I'm like, actually, I've spent a lot of my career explaining why climbing is a really safe sport. So not really at all. Because 99.9% of climbers, and don't quote me on that statistic, it's just a guesstimate, don't free solo. And like, to me, that's not what the sport's about. So I think that the film did a really good job of explaining that, but the takeaway still, for whatever reason, people have, some people have associated that with what climbing is, and versus like a movie like Dawn Wall or something where it's a little bit more of the norm of how people normally climb. I think that that's like created a bit of like a myth around the sport.
Yeah, thank you. I've even seen some of that in my own experience, you know, when people find out, oh, you're learning how to climb, like in that movie. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I can barely do anything at the gym. Like, so it's just interesting getting into the sport and seeing the kind of misconceptions that people have. So anyway, yeah, thank you for your answer. That was really, really insightful.
Yeah, no, totally. When I've been asked, like, well, what if you fall? And I'm like, I fall every day into a rope and I'm safe. So yeah, totally. No, that's a great point.
Awesome. Thanks for the question, Alex. Just before we get to Ryan, to reset the room really quick. So ladies and gentlemen, we're here with Sasha DeJulian. She's a pro climber, an unbelievable pro climber who's kind of overcoming a year of injury. We kind of covered that. And now we're into the Q&A portion. We talked a little bit about life and now we're in the Q&A portion. So if anybody else does have a question, feel free to come up. If nobody has a question after Ryan, I will certainly ask some of the juicier ones that I've got up here. But Ryan, how's it going?
It's great, Grant. How are you?
Good, mate. Good to see you.
I just wanted to first off by saying, Grant, you're doing another great job here. So congratulations on that. You've asked a bunch of questions that I would have asked. I have, I know Sasha to some degree. Hi, Sasha. How you doing?
Hey, good to see you in this room.
Yeah, we work together a little bit. Sasha's a ambassador for the brand I work for, which is Stellar. And I know her a little bit through more of the business side then obviously watched her climb in terms of her climbing career. But personally, it's been, you know, working together as her as an ambassador. And one of the things that I know about her is that she's extremely humble. And it's, I love that you asked the question about philosophy, Grant, because I've been blown away by Sasha's ability to have about 16 things in the air at the same time, plates in the air, different projects. She's always seems to be thinking about new things and doing, trying new things, which I really admire. And one of the things I admire the most is how business-minded she is. And as a professional athlete, my question is kind of twofold. As a female professional athlete, are you seeing greater numbers of athletes turn their fame, if you will, through their climbing or their through their sports, I should say, into the ability to move into the business world and make that leap successfully and being taken more seriously? Sort of a question, tipping my hat to the nature of the day, International Women's Day. And the second question is, what advice would you give to people who are, you know, working on their passions, but how do you turn that into a into both a profession and then and skip into the sort of the broader world of business? So long question. Thanks for letting me get it out.
Yeah. Good
question.
And I'm stoked you mentioned Stellar, because for those of you guys who are in the room, Stellar is an awesome way to show your adventures and tell a story and do it in a really creative, fun way. And to the International Women's Day question, for athletes turning, and in particular women, their careers into businesses, I think that what's made being a professional athlete turn a bit on its head is the introduction of social media. Because when I first started climbing, I the way that I knew of climbers and you know, looked up to people were posters and magazines. And when I was 12, I had my first sponsor, and that basically happened through through a magazine picking up on your accolades and featuring you, and then like a company reads it and then writes to you. And then I was always really like, I wanted to keep my parents out of my climbing career. And I think a bit of it was like just proving to them, who had no idea what climbing was, that I had this like vindicating, like, I want to show that this is a legitimate sport. So I'm going to like prove to you that I can be financially independent from it. Obviously didn't happen when I was 12. But I think what social media has provided is just like this pretty, pretty connected thread of like, you have an audience and you can speak to that audience. And what I at least always try to do is just like literally like pull up my caption box and write what's on my mind, which probably isn't like the best social media practices or whatever. Like, I don't know anything about algorithms, and I'm new to Clubhouse. This is my second room. But
you're doing great.
Thanks. Probably rambling too much, but what I do think is like really important is just crafting your voice. And I think that athletes turning their careers into businesses, like, you develop your sense of values and what you stand by and your non-negotiables. And then that helps dictate which brands you align with. And then in the process, I think you start thinking like, well, what if I created something myself? And maybe like the creativity is partially inspired through the environment on social. So yeah, I think that honing into your craft and figuring out from your craft what you can do, from being an athlete to being more involved in business. I get kind of bored. Like, I don't want to put down just climbing, but I feel like when I have my mind activated in different ways, then I feel really stimulated by life. And like, especially in this injury, that process was really like highlighted because I couldn't do anything else. So it was like, either wallow and watch Netflix, or I could actually do something with my time that would give me purpose when I wake up. And then as far as taking your passion and turning it into a profession, I don't have like the best advice. Like with climbing, my career kind of came about in like a way that I never really was a kid and like thought that I wanted to be a professional climber, because I didn't really know what that meant. And when I was younger, what professional climbers meant was like kind of living in your van and eating bars, you know, and like, not that anything's wrong with that. I just didn't, I didn't want that to be what I strive for, because I didn't relate. And so I guess it kind of melds into that first question, is like, there's a lot of possibilities now to be creative with what you want out of what even you want your job to be. Like, I feel like I still learn about people doing interesting things, and I'm like, I didn't even know that was a job, but that's cool. And so I guess that's it. Like, just like,
yeah, like,
know what you're passionate about.
Love
yeah,
it.
I would just say, Grant, if I may, that Sasha, your social media, you might say that you're a novice, but you're one of my favorite athletes to follow. And one of the factors is why we chose to offer or extend an invitation to partner with us as an ambassador, was because you share a very, very genuine voice. You use your platform to do as much good in the world as you can. And we love that. And I love following you personally. So I don't think you're that much of a novice, but I just wanted to suggest that everyone do go follow Sasha, because she's a great person to be connected to.
Thanks. I get it.
Awesome. So I just want to let everybody know, pretty strict time ending here in 10 minutes, because I know Sasha wants to go spend some time with her mom. We'll definitely get to Maria's question. I know Austin and TI. Austin's currently using my Epic Pass because I can't ski this year. I'm editing that out of this conversation. TI is one of my best, oldest friends. I know neither of them will be offended if we don't get to them, Sasha. So let's go over to Maria, and then I think we'll probably wrap it up. Maria, how are you?
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for being here. Of course, feel free to ask Sasha your question.
Yeah, I will. Thank you. I'm so excited to see climbers on Clubhouse. I'm relatively new to the platform and looking for climbers, so super excited. Sasha, I've been following your career for a while. Amazing to have you in this space. I'm a trad climber of mediocre abilities, I would say, in the climbing world, but love it. And one thing I would love to hear about is your relationship, or your philosophy on fear and how to deal with fear and anxiety, which in trad climbing pops up quite a lot because our life is in our own hands and our Camelots. So yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Totally. Yeah. It's, I think that as well as Alex's question are really relevant. Like, that it shows like how climbing does invoke fear. I see that you climb in the gunks, which is awesome. I, when I was in school in New York, I'd escape up to the gunks over the weekends when I could. I think that fear is just one of those things that you always have to start with classifying what's rational and what's irrational. Like, if you're trad climbing, I know it happens more often than sport climbing. Like, you could be in a situation where it's just not going to be safe to fall. And I think in those situations, when I've experienced them in my own climbing, then I try to center my focus around how I can be extremely present and in control of my movement in front of me, and focus on that and not let those negative thoughts enter my mind, because it's basically just that. Like, negative energy is only going to be heavy and pull you away from what you need to be focused on. And then when it's that irrational fear, I think it's a little bit less extreme to deal with. Like if you're climbing and in a no fall zone where the consequences are super serious, then that's going to be different than if you're, you know, high above your bolt and scared to fall, but the fall is totally clean, which I experienced both of them. And, especially lately, I've been just like in fear of a lot of climbing. And I think that the way that I deal with that irrational fear component is kind of like what I mentioned before of just taking the fall. Like sometimes it's just like you let go and you feel what that, that thing that you're so afraid of feels like, and you debunk that mystique around like what the consequences may be. So you prove to yourself that it's totally fine. And then moving forward, I feel like you build up this tolerance for what you're okay with and like expand that horizon of being less fearful.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's something I've been working with. It's like what's useful and what's not, and you're speaking to that. So to appreciate it.
Totally. Great question.
Awesome. Yeah, I just wrote down, sometimes you have to let yourself fall.
Yeah.
Just such a good piece of advice, right? Awesome. So, Sasha, we've got about 6 minutes left. Kind of just bringing in for a landing here. I'm just going to say, you know, do you have any maybe parting thoughts for anyone here? Or, you know, we're recording this, so who knows, this will go out into the world and may end up in the ears of some little girl somewhere who's dreaming of being a climber or doing something amazing with her life. What would you say to maybe a little girl who is, you know, trying to just starting their life and trying to dream big?
Yeah, I love that, especially on this chat has been really fun. I think what I would say is don't let what's out there define you. Like, let what you want to do define what you do. So to that notion of me not seeing necessarily like exactly what I want to be or what I want out of my life, not that my life is done or whatever, but for the career that I've created, I could never have like put a pen to paper and written it down and described what I wanted that to be. I just kind of started with what I loved doing. And so I feel like if you really just put your thoughts towards like, what do you enjoy doing? And like, do you want to commit the time and effort towards honing that? And then see where it takes you and think creatively and surround yourself by positive people. Because I think that that's a huge component, is like your support network and listening and building a circle of trust to people that you want to listen to. Then I feel like a lot kind of ends up working out. And if it doesn't work out, I feel like you learn from it. Like the worst thing that could happen is you fall and then you just get back up and climb again, per se. So I think that would be the advice that I leave with.
That was beautiful. Thank you. Awesome. Cool. I just want to say thank you again for coming here tonight. You know, I know you've got some stuff going on in your personal life. So really thank you for taking this hour with us. I'm really, really grateful. So I hope you'll come back sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be a total pleasure. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Cool. So thank you. That was Sasha DeJulian, pro climber. So awesome to hear from her. I think Karina has an announcement. Before that, I do want to say our next conversation is going to actually be on Saturday morning. It's going to be my first international conversation with a gentleman named Omar Samra. He's Egyptian. Amina knows him. Okay.
Yeah.
He has completed the Explorer's Grand Slam, which means he's climbed all 7 summits and been to both the North and South Pole. And he's like rowing across the Atlantic. He's just a really awesome guy. You know, if you're around Saturday morning, it's going to be 9 a.m. Mountain Time. So if you're around and you want to tune in, come on in. I think that'll be a really interesting talk.
Yeah, Kareen, I second that.
Awesome. Kareen's got one more thing to say here. Kareen?
Hey, in honor of National Women's Day today and the week, really, but starting to kick it off today and following this great discussion, I want to ask all the lady climbers to join me in a meeting after this now. Lady crushers, so we could just meet up and hang out. And if anyone else wants to come, you can come, because we haven't had a climbing talk yet. So let's do it.
I love it.
And thank you for kicking it off, Sasha.
Awesome.
With your positive notes on everything. I really appreciate hearing that.
That's awesome.
Cool. Well, rad. I hope you ladies have fun in that room crushing it. Thank you again, Sasha, and everybody have a great night.